live. You can do
live
meditation.
Hey, it's my privilege to welcome you out today. Appreciate you coming, taking the time. We're starting a little bit late because of technology, but we'll catch up, I'm sure, with the new chair that will be chairing the committee from after today. Who do we have? Let's go around and introduce ourselves, and we'll, so doing, we have a couple of members. So, do you want to start?
Paul Cousins, Iron County Commissioner, and I've invited Garth Green, Cedar City Mayor, to serve on this board to represent Iron County as one of the mayors, and so he should be joining us late, but maybe I can introduce him.
Okay, that'll be great.
Wade Hollingson, Beaver County Commissioner.
Gil Unquist was Washington County Commissioner.
And I'm Jerry Taylor, Garfield County Commissioner.
Melanie Torgerson, Esquimony City Mayor.
Janet Billings, Hurricane City Mayor.
Tyler Fells, Beaver County School District.
Nolan Davis, Milford City Mayor.
Celeste Myers, Kane County Commissioner, and I've also appointed Lyle Golding, Mayor of, is it Orderville and Mount Carmel now?
Yeah, Orderville encompasses the whole, yeah.
And Brian Theriot with Fife County.
Lorraine Cox, Washington County School District.
Like you said, I'm Lyle Golding, Mayor of Orderville Town, so.
Very good.
Gary Zabriskie of Fife County.
Do we want to go back here and you can introduce yourself?
Yes, I'm Bergen Eskelson. I'm with the Utah Division of Forestry, Fire, and State Lands. I'm the Forest Products and Businesses Coordinator.
Great.
He'll be on the agenda later.
Okay.
I'm Keith Hansen. I'm the Southern Microbes Office.
I'm Chris Palmer. I'm going to be the new principal of Career Tech High School. I'll be presenting that today.
Great.
Welcome. Dave Gardner. I'm Chris Palmer's assistant.
I'm Kyle Wilson with Senator Mitt Romney's office.
Thank you.
Cindy Bullock from Congressman Chris Stewart's office.
And I'm David Busk with the Department of Workforce Services.
Great. Thanks, everybody, for coming. I appreciate it. Now it's my privilege to hand the gavel off to Celeste. So it's now yours.
Thank you. So I'll be stepping in as the chair just because of the rotation of things, and I'd like to start us off with the Pledge of Allegiance. Lyle, would you give that for us?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you all. Now I'd entertain a motion regarding the minutes from January 11th, 2023.
So moved. I'll second that motion.
Everybody wants a second.
Yeah.
We're going to go with you, Nolan. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Who made the motion?
Unquist.
Motion carries. Now it's time for the Region CIB third trimester project application review by the steering committee. So Gary, it sounds like you'll be leading on that one.
Quickly cover this one here. We only have one application here. I guess I'm getting the view of the camera. Not that it matters. But up and down this way.
You can buy it.
That's okay.
All right, sounds good. And we've got 3 minutes on this one.
Right. We only have one application for this third and final trimester of the CIB fiscal year. It's from St. George City. They are applying for the new City Hall and parking structure project that they have announced publicly just a short time ago at the end of 2022. And they've had several public meetings and a public hearing for the CIB. The total project cost for this, and I sent out a bunch of information on it, since it was one of the largest projects we've seen come in for CIB funding, they are asking for $20 million as a loan from the Community Impact Board, which means they'll pay that fully back with interest, and they are matching it with $25 million of local funds, of city funds, so it's a $45 million project. A few years ago, they came into the CIB with an application to remodel the existing city office, adding some space to it, and also adding on to the police station up on the hill. During when COVID hit, they put that on a back burner for a short time and then decided to rethink things. They went with a bunch of different options. They had a lot of focus meetings and came up with the best solution was to stay downtown, which as a planner, I think that's a great idea for them. So the CIB does have loan money. It'll be interesting how this plays out. There is another large application at the same trimester. But the CIB tries to fund projects, and especially loan projects. So our board can either support a project, remain neutral, or not support a project. But this is in the statute for CIB that the Regional Association of Governments, where a project is located, has to chime in on a project. And it's not done by staff. It's done by our governing board. So it's up to this board how they want to respond to this one.
Okay, well, you might as well stay there, Gary, because the next thing's you as well. So I'm not seeing that. I think we're just reviewing it at this time. There's not a discussion and vote on how we want to steer this. Is that correct?
Requires a motion and vote.
Yeah, it just requires a motion and then support or remain neutral on a project. And our board has done all three of those things over the time. It's not a rubber stamp. It depends on the project.
Okay.
I have visited with a lot of the council members, and they are in favor of it, so we make a motion that we support the project.
Okay, there's a motion to support.
Second.
And a second from Commissioner Almquist.
I live there.
Yes.
I want to be able to hold over the head the fact that their first drawings are pretty ugly. And therefore,
their first one.
You don't like signs. You don't like.
No. So therefore, if I second this, I can go in and say, that is the ugliest roof I've ever seen. Or I withdraw my second.
We have a motion. Is there any other discussion? Okay, all those in favor? All right, will this be a roll call, actually?
Aye.
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 All right, so the motion carries at that one. Item number 7, A95 area-wide clearinghouse review regarding a SITLA project. Gary's going to present on that one. It does require a motion and a vote after 3 minutes of presentation.
We did have somebody join us. I don't know who, until I get back here, who joined us on the. I believe it might be our school board representative for Iron County. This next project, this is an area-wide clearinghouse review for a SITLA property, and what the proposal is a water line running from a private water well to a livestock water trough on trust lands. Be about 5,000 feet on trust lands and be placed on the edge of an existing two-track road. This is in Iron County, contacted the county. The comments that they have were that they appreciate the opportunity to comment on the proposal. It's an important range improvement project for grazing in this area. Installation of a water line and trough are important to better manage grazing resources. Drought conditions have plagued this area during the past year, and these range improvements will help improve grazing and other resources in the area. And said that Iron County is pleased that SITLA is working with the livestock owners on proposals such as this project. So recommendation from staff to the steering committee is that they vote to be supportive of this project, as Iron County is supportive of it as well.
There isn't just a right-of-way?
It's a water line.
It's the water line. Anytime they do work on trust lands and that they have to get a area wide clearinghouse review from us. So it's not creating a right-of-way that didn't already exist.
It's on the edge of the two track.
Okay. There is a right-of-way already.
Yes.
Well, there's a two-track. Yeah.
I make a motion with support.
Second.
All right. I'd entertain a motion.
I motion with support.
You did. Did somebody second? Okay. How about some discussion?
Aye.
Okay.
And we don't need to do a roll call.
We don't need to do a roll call.
If there's any opposed, then we'll.
Very good. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion to support carries.
Madam Chair, can I introduce our Mayor Garth Green from Cedar City?
Hi, Garth.
Hi, Garth.
Appreciate him accepting this opportunity to serve on this board. He'll be a great asset to the board.
Yes, very good. And the Kane County School Board Representative, Lisa Livingston, is excused from this meeting.
Thank you.
Okay. Next, eight. Okay, the United States Department of Transportation grant award to the FCAOG, Pike County Association of Governments, to develop comprehensive safety action plan, Safe Streets for All. And Brian, we've got that for 5 minutes.
Yes, and if you look on the back of your packet on page 21, I just received notice that Fife County did receive this funding grant from the Department of Transportation for $1 million, and it's for safety. It's narrow in that it's just within the boundaries of Washington County. I did read that Cedar City did also get a grant for this, but the main objective and goal of this is to identify really safety needs, traffic needs, Commissioner Almquist, Mayor Billings, within the street systems. And so as that safety plan comes together, we could look at like $50 million coming in to address those.
But the plan has to come first?
The plan's got to come first and identify them.
And this plan costs $1 million?
It's $1 million, yes.
Be a good plan.
I think Cedar City got 60?
Cedar City got
a plan.
Yeah, to do a safety plan too within the boundary of Cedar City.
On the north end of Cedar,
60 grand?
Yeah.
Well, every community could apply, you're saying?
I think there's going to be one plan, and it will, Myron with the MPO will kind of lead out on that.
Who creates the plan, or who does the plan?
It will be the Dixie Metropolitan Planning Organization within the Fife County that will do that, that will work on that plan.
And all of it, so for example, if I say, hey kids, here's $1 million, go enjoy the movie, they're going to come home with a test letter or two. The point being is the plan only money, this grant money, up to that for only planning, or can there's no nuts and bolts, no pavement, no...
That comes later, after the plan is finished. After the plan is finished, yeah.
Okay.
And then UDOT will be also looking to see if they can leverage funding to go towards this too.
Well, they don't have to draw the plan down.
Right, yeah. So that's... We're just learning about it right now.
So all the cities are aware of this, and they're going to use the plan with it. I mean,
so the Dixie Metropolitan Planning Organization meets once a month, and they'll learn more about it because it will be dealing with Washington County. Okay. I thought it was all of Fife County, but Fife County was the umbrella organization that was wrapped up into this.
So. If other counties want to participate,
yeah.
What is the action plan on this one?
So that would be writing another grant.
But so would they talk to you and you would send them the information?
Yes.
Okay. So
who wrote this grant, Washington County or Fife County?
What's that?
Who wrote this grant, Fife Counties or Washington County?
So it's the Dixie Metropolitan that's housed in Fife County that wrote for this grant.
And got it.
And okay. Got it. Yeah.
Okay.
The Dixie MPO has written for dozens of grants, never received them. This is the first one they've received. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Congrats. That's awesome. Yeah, congrats. Yeah.
Okay. Anything else about that?
No, that's it.
Somebody raising their hand on the screen.
Dang Chinese balloon listening on.
That was just a discussion item. So next we'll have the State of Utah Business Survey update with Brian. And this is a potential 10 minutes.
Yeah, I don't think I'll do 10. But there is a packet outside over here. It's a business survey. And it's from Des Moines Associates. This is in relation, a business survey did go out statewide. And this data is what is being collected to feed into our regional economic development strategy. I'm really hoping that you've read through all of it, and if you have questions, let me know.
This is different from the one that Nate sent us?
I think so.
He sent us that other...
Did you get this already?
No, I don't think it's that.
It came in the packet from Gary?
Yeah.
Okay.
The one in the packet from Gary.
You grab one, too.
But I...
One of these, the large one.
So again, this data will feed into our regional strategy. But I wanted to highlight on page 45, if you could flip to that, and you look down at the bottom, on the overall business environment within the five-county region, you can see the respondents said a majority of five-county and Uinta Basin respondents felt that airline services were poor or worse out of all of the other AOGs. That was the feeling and mood. And then if you flip over to page 46, under business environment, Mountainland, which is in Utah County, and Bear River, Logan, respondents had the most positive feeling of the entrepreneurial environment, but yet Five County was the least positive. So these are just items I kind of want to...
And where's this company from? Wuhan?
No, they're from back east, and they did a survey.
They're from Bear River.
Yeah. Camion Associates?
Yeah, Des Moines Associates. They're from back east, and they're the consultants that the state of Utah hired. And part of that hiring, they asked if Des Moines would do a statewide survey, business survey.
Okay.
So that's...
Do you know how they targeted businesses?
So that's a question. That's a great question I have. If you really look at the methodology, it's to me, it's not very representative of five county here.
Well, it seems like 300 statewide is pretty paltry to start with.
Exactly. So anyway, and on page 47, you can read where at the bottom where it says five county and Mountainland respondents felt the most negative about their access to natural gas. And then page 48, under business environment, five county respondents were the least positive about their access to electricity. All right?
Who doesn't have electricity?
Well, my candles are fine.
Yeah. These are businesses. Night. I mean, so you're talking about businesses, right? Yeah. You're not talking about residents or anything.
Maybe they're talking about Hurricane City. Because maybe they only targeted Hurricane City. Because we have a lot of issues with power right now. Getting it to... all the preliminary plots and final site plans.
Interesting.
And so they could be talking about our area. We have 54 square miles, and we are really struggling to get power. We're in the process.
And that could be.
They could be. That could be. Where they targeted. It could be.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the last one on page 67, government outreach. It was mentioned by the respondents that businesses in the Five County and Wasatch Front, the EDD is the Economic Development Districts, of which this body is a member of, are the most likely to have been contacted by state or local government in the past 3 years to discuss their needs and challenges.
So, one.
Yes.
Got one, folks.
Right. So, anyway, my encouragement is that you look this over. I'd say with a grain of salt too, because I don't think the sampling's fully representative.
How much did they pay for this?
Yeah, the state of Utah paid for it.
Millions.
So,
I'd be interested. I would be interested to see if we could do a survey
ourselves.
We could ask the same questions.
Yeah.
And but sample a little bit from every county to see if this is real or not. I don't know what that would cost us.
Interesting.
So.
Well, and I think rural is going to answer them differently than say Washington County. So I don't think it's a fair sample either.
Mm-hmm. Well, especially when it comes to natural gas. I mean. I think Panguitch has it, right? Do you have it in King County?
We have it in Beaver.
We have propane.
I was told just a half hour ago that a business that had no building but wanted power on their property
was required by Cedar City to put all the road improvements in.
Good luck with that.
Or they could have, or they could assign off so they could get electricity. It's a pretty expensive electricity.
Yeah. That's why
it's Westview Drive.
So, Commissioner, to answer your question, we could certainly look at a survey with us too.
Any other discussion about that?
And I think we could do a Qualtrics for cheap.
Survey Monkey. Yeah.
Well, just a cross section. I don't know. So, what were you at the What's Up Down South?
Mm-mm.
Somebody in this room was at What's Up Down South. Yeah, Mayor, you'll remember that Phil Green?
Yep.
No, Dean. He was, in many regards, the opposite of this message. Like, the most resilient to come out of a possible recession was Washington County. And obviously that spills into Southwest Utah. Yeah, you were there too, yeah, Dave? So it's interesting.
I was there too.
Yeah, thank you. It's interesting the respondents here compared to what other state data was showing about areas.
Yeah, I mean, if they only did 30 respondents, for, I mean, sorry, 300 respondents for this entire
state
survey, and then there's 30 counties more or less, that means 10 people from each county or 200 people from Wasatch County and then one from our region, you know. We don't know how it's distributed. Doesn't say right.
But it's worth noting at least those many people feel this way.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Seeing no further discussion, I'll move on to item number 10, Washington County Technical High School. It opens August 2023 and looks like there'll be multiple people presenting on that. We might even have 30 minutes on this.
Before we begin, let me introduce you to Brian asked me to bring this discussion presentation, and I decided that it would be better to have the people on the ground tell you about it. So Dave Gardner, Dave, is our CT director from the school district, and we hired Chris Homer to run our new CT high school, and he's bringing it from the ground up. There's never been anything like this in the state yet. Mm-hmm. So it's a big job. He's done a great job, and I'll turn it over to you, Chris.
If it fails, I'm the only one getting fired.
No, so. It's not going to fail. It's going to be very successful.
It's definitely not going to fail.
Which outcome are you hoping for?
No. I honestly, this has been a really exciting project for us. And I'll just say before I start that the response from our students and families has really kind of caught us off guard. I think the school's built for 800. And I think the early was, you know what, if you get 400 in there the first year, we're going to be fine. Because we know seniors probably aren't coming. Juniors probably not. You're not really. We're at 500 today that have accepted and committed to come. And we actually think it'll be, if we could get our building open, and I'll touch on that in my presentation too, if we could get that building open, we think we'll be closer to 600 year one. And we've had lots of applications and continual support and families that keep saying, my kid's excited about education for the first time in their life. So I'll start there, but I'll cruise through this. You guys seem like a group that cares about their time, and so am I. So, I'll try to just touch on the most important parts of this. Because as we try to envision what this is, and this is just so you know, I've been in I live in Hurricane. I was in their schools for the last 25 years. I was at Hurricane High School for about 20 of those. I was a football coach. I coached one of Nanette's sons when I saw her today. I remember Willie, so it was good. And then, but I come from a super traditional background, and then. I said, well, I was at Hurricane Middle School as the principal for the last 5 years, and I says, there's no way I can handle another year of eighth grade lunch. So if you haven't been to one of those, you should try that sometime, but that's not true. I do feel like I'm kind of oriented to be a high school person. That's what I spent my first 20 years, and And so I was kind of looking for a new challenge, a new opportunity in my own career. And this presented itself. We talked about it for a couple of years, and I decided to apply, and I was selected, and I'm excited about it. It's just been really fun. Even though I'm from that traditional background, every day I have to say, think outside the box, be different, think different, and that's what we want to do. There are other technical schools in the state of Utah, but they usually go to their home high school, and then they are bused to, say, a Granite Technical Institute or a Catalyst in Davis County for a few classes, and then they spend most of their time at their home high school. We're the first in Utah because we're doing academic and all the CTE and technical stuff in one building. So they're really going to truly be our students. They'll graduate from Career and Technical High School, CTHS. The one thing that we bit off that's huge is we're going to allow our students to play sports at their home high schools. And that one's going to be a little bit of a interesting, but I'm so happy we're doing that because we still want those kids to come to our school too. And that's kind of my background, and I love those kids. So I'm happy we're taking that one on. But that's just a few things. This is kind of, as we attack this thing, this is how we wanted to look at this. We want it to be different. We want kids that fit with us versus boundary schools. And what I'm saying, I even say in the little video I'll show in a second, is that, you know, I think too many of our students walk through the doors of their high schools every day thinking, why should I be here? And for us, we want to say, we want kids to think, this is why I'm here. They're why. We talk about that a lot in leadership at every level. But I have stories every day from parents saying, I don't know what's going on here, but my kid's excited to come to your school. Whatever you said in that presentation. And it's not that. It's just that kids want to be there. And as they've been accepted, we get more really cool stories. I had a mom just a few days ago said that their daughter was crying because she got accepted into our health science pathway. And that's not the norm in public schools, to be honest, right? It's a little bit of a grind for our students, but this allows us to do something a little bit different and in a different way. And I'll explain that as we go through, and I'll just cruise through this. But this is a 3-minute video that will give you some good insights. This was done about 3 months ago, so our building looks very different. I'll give you some updates on that, but if you'll hit play on that, I'll let you watch that for a second.
Nearly a decade in the making, Career and Technical High School represents a bold new opportunity for students in Washington County. Students in the 21st century are creators, influencers, entrepreneurial, and innovative. They learn by doing. At Career and Technical High, we are creating an educational environment to meet the needs and strengths of these students.
As we observed the growth in Washington County, we knew that an additional high school was a necessity. We felt that a school that pinpointed career and workforce development would be a perfect fit for our current needs. CT High School offers an opportunity for students to go beyond a diploma. 8 different career pathways serve as a launch pad to their future success.
We selected the pathways based on feedback from our business community, discussions with our higher ed partners, and information from our current CTE programs.
In addition, information from our current CTE programs helped us to pinpoint student needs. The pathways are designed to give students opportunities to explore careers that are in high demand. Our vision is that students completing these pathways will open doors to immediate employment or additional opportunities for training and further education.
The 8 pathways have inspired the building design to look and feel different, to encourage innovation and creativity. Career and Technical High will be infused with the latest technology in all aspects of the curriculum. We are creating a campus that unlocks students' imaginations to the possibilities in front of them.
We wanted the entire school to be the classroom. Every element in this building is designed to be flexible. The gym, the courtyard, the commons area, the gathering stair, the lecture hall can all serve as instructional spaces or be easily adapted to host school social activities or even community events.
We truly believe that this will be a different and special opportunity for students.
As education changes, we want to offer something unique for Washington County. Our vision is that we want our students to learn, explore, interact, connect, and engage in a whole new way. Instead of students asking, "Why am I here?" we hope students at Career and Technical High School say, "This is why I'm here." We invite you to be part of one of our 8 pathways in August 2023 and find your why at Career Tech High.
Again, the building looks much different. It's much farther along. I think we're crossing our fingers, but we're really, truly hoping to be able to open our doors in May so that we can get our students that have accepted to be there in that school. Because as my trustee sidekick and vice principal Brad Bench says, he goes, it's two guys, a PowerPoint, and a dream right now. I mean, that's what it really feels like at times. So I say this all the time, but this is a new project for us, and we feel like we're building an airplane while it's flying through the air. But go ahead and just click through all of those, and I'll cruise through the most important stuff down at the bottom. But this is about 8 years in the process. We're really mostly patterned after a school in Houston, Texas, called Career and Technical High School. And it very much was the inspiration for us. Now, as I say that, I didn't think there was many schools like ours in the United States. And I've learned over the last 8 months that is not true. In Las Vegas, they have 7 what they call career and technical academies, and they're building their 8th that will open also in August. So these are not new ideas, and they're gaining popularity. The school in Houston only lets about 1 out of every 3 students gets accepted. Their waiting lists are very long. And we, with just this first year's, we think we're going to be right there. It's going to be one of those things that kids really, really want to get into, and it feels that way already, so we'll go from there. But that's kind of where we're at. Just a couple real, I'll skip over some of this, but the one thing we aren't is a lot of people think we're a trade school. In fact, at first everybody's like, "Oh, I can't wait to get my kid there to learn how to weld or do auto mechanics." But the paper that was handed out today does show our 8 pathways, and I'll get to those in a second, but we really see ourselves technology-oriented, and we are looking for kids that are a good fit, and that's what we're hoping for. So just go to the next page, if you would. Just click on all 8 of those. And here's our 8 pathways. I'll point out a couple interesting things, because you'll notice some big differences here. Like, if I said we have, quote-unquote, some blue-collar pathways, we're excited about our construction pathway and our culinary pathway, and we believe that students coming out of those will be able to go right to work if they choose. Obviously, there's more educational opportunities in all of these, but the building, these 8 pathways were chosen, and then the building was built, and that's what makes it really different. For example, in construction, there's a room that's about as big as a small gymnasium. It has a 10-ton crane that moves around in the rafters, and we'll build tiny homes, small homes, sheds. And so we have an enclosed space just to teach those carpentry skills, HVAC skills, plumbing skills, foundationally, and then we'll move from there. But you can see all of ours. Our 3 biggest, by far it was health science. Kids wanted to be in that, and that was we didn't know what to expect. But that was by far our first, followed closely by our engineering pathway, was a huge response to that. And our 3rd was business marketing and entrepreneurship. But we didn't have any, the one that kind of surprised us was our IT and cybersecurity pathway was, and it still is struggling a little bit. And one of the things that anybody in IT and cybersecurity goes, "Don't those kids know how many jobs are there, high-paying careers?" In fact, talked to a cybersecurity guy the other day. He goes, he was, I think, 31, 32. He's making $300,000 a year because he's talented. And they're begging for these type of professionals. And so we think they'll all get rolling. We truly do. We built a preschool inside of our school. So we'll be a little bit of a focus on early childhood education plus eventually just introducing, and we're going to build our own ranks a little bit as we head towards possible teacher shortages on that. So does anybody have any question on these eight pathways before I just kind of cruise to the next slide?
So on these pathways, do you choose a pathway when you first go in, or can you change, or what if you don't like that to get there? I mean, how does that work?
Yeah, great question, and was asked over and over again. So we are asking 14 and 15-year-olds to choose a four-year basically pathway without a lot of deviation in that, because we said we're pathway-oriented.
Right.
So the first thing I will say is this. As a vision, we're saying, we are going to put you in your pathway, but we want to make sure that you're an awesome person coming out of CTHS. We're going to build like entrepreneurship skills, all of our kids, you know, professional skills, human skills, all these soft skills. We want to make you the best person we possibly can, but we know that these kids, some of them will go, whoa, this wasn't what I signed up for. First step will be try to move them into another pathway, and if we just can't find a fit or there's no room, they'll just go back to their boundary school, their home school, which is something we've talked about a lot. And this, where it's a school district school, it's going to be easy to just take care of kids.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Lorene knows this because some of the background to this was, first of all, there was this combination between, at the time, Dixie State and the high schools to have students taking classes at the high school or at the college level. But then they came to Dixie Tech, and we were saying, we want students that can come to at night and try other pathways for them because they don't want to be an English major, but yet they're struggling at school, so their parents say, what do you want to be? Well, I'd like to build houses. I'd like to be, you know, involved in something with my hands or what have you, or tech.
Yeah.
And then the discussions came with school board members, Bergeson, Biff Williams, and Dixie Tech. And we said, why don't you build this school that builds them up into those fields? And that's how this started. Didn't we start talking about this? I know you said 8 years or whatever, but we hit it hard 4 years ago when we were together.
Yeah, I presented it to the tech, the tech school, about 4 years ago.
Yeah.
I had to convince them that we weren't trying to steal their thunder, that we were a feeder school.
Right.
And they're all working very, very well together, all three.
Yeah,
the university, the tech, and our high school. And it's going to be awesome.
Someone in construction might say, gee, I really also want to be a welder.
Yeah.
And then they already have that background, they come to us.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. We actually had this discussion like 8 years ago in this meeting.
We did, yeah.
Yeah, we talked about it. There was a member of the school board that was on this.
It was the attorney.
Terry
Hutchinson.
Terry
did talk.
I was on the tech board at the time, and Terry was here.
Yeah, Terry brought it up.
Okay, yeah. And that leads to my question. You know, when we had them discussions back years ago, they also talked about incorporating the trade. Are they going to have some expansion down the road of this, or is it too early to decide to bring in?
I think we've already talked a phase two. Because parents are saying, well, what about this pathway? What about this pathway? Whether it's something like cosmetology or if something like aviation and SkyWest. SkyWest is like, listen, we have needs too. Yeah. We want talented kids. So, yes, and there's some people in our district, one of them sitting behind you, that says this might be our first CTHS. We might have another one sometime down the road. If this proves to be beneficial to kids, community, there's lots of benefits to it, but right now we're still, again, building that airplane. We'll have to fly through the air, so, yeah.
Is there hands-on, or is it mostly classroom?
No. Well, they have to get their diploma, yes. So, but the whole thing, I mean, that we've been selling is learn by doing. That is CTE education. There is some money for extra equipment and things like that. So, I mean, right now we have Washington County has a construction program. They'll have a home in the parade of homes this year, and they have for 4 years in a row. We're absorbing that. So our juniors and seniors will be, if they choose, if that's the part of construction they want to go into, they'll be building homes. So, yeah, I mean, that's just one pathway, but we put that preschool in our school so it's hands-on. Culinary Arts, we built this unbelievably nice commercial kitchen. Like, It's commercial grade. It's as nice as it gets. So any one of these, well, they'll be doing those things. And we want our academic teachers, and the whole building's built for collaboration, that math isn't just going to be math. It's going to be math that helps them with their pathway. Mm-hmm. So that's the
This is a huge need. I mean, I was a kid 42 years ago. I loved every class I could to work in woodshop.
And it's the primary teacher.
I could leave early, and you know, it's
a common, almost every family says, I have one of those, or I have two. You know, this is the right school for lots of kids, so I agree with you.
How's it funded?
It's
Is it like public school? So it's public?
We're Washington County School District.
School district, this is the same.
And you have to realize that they do have to do their co-curriculum.
Yeah.
That
so
comes
still
first.
The same.
That comes first. And we talked about that in the beginning. If they deviate from their core curriculum and they're not getting good grades there, they get pulled off of their pathway until they can get back that. They have to graduate with a degree.
Well-rounded.
A high school degree.
That should go down. And we feel that's like a minimum bar for us, to be honest. Like, credentialing certificates, every one of these pathways, you'll get something that you would not get. Well, you'll get more than you would get at one of our six other high schools, eight other high schools with Water Canyon and Christ. So, you know, we want to give you something. I'll get to the slide, but we want it to be a competitive advantage out in the real world. So,
what if you get too big?
Phase two, I don't know. Waiting lists. All these schools have waiting lists. In Las Vegas, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
The problem I thought we might have that doesn't appear is, like, in Las Vegas, people are avoiding their home high schools. I'll get my kid out of here. I want him in one of these schools.
Right.
We have eight fantastic high schools, six big high schools. They're still coming. People want to be part of this. And they just see it as a different way to be in.
Commissioner, I also wanted to add, there was a voter bond of Washington County that pushed this over.
This is like the last thing on the ballot.
Are each of the pathways roughly 100 students, or are they weighted, the counts weighted differently?
That's exactly right. Well, we're looking at that about 100 students, but keep in mind, we're overfilling freshman and sophomore classes. We know there'll be attrition. So at times, we think we'll be bigger than 800, but there might be 25 seniors with 30 freshmen. So it'll all balance out. That's about all the room we
have. But the culinary arts program has 100 assigned, and the construction has 100 assigned.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Eight pathways times 100, that's our 800.
I was at Catalyst 2 days ago, and they're full.
Yeah.
They have about 70 to go, and they think that the next, their fall start, they'll be full. But the nice thing about it, and I think you're hit it right on, and Lorene's right, is they said this. The students that were failing in traditional school, then they're coming over here, and they're doing cybersecurity or something. But they still have to complete their other work. Their GPA, when it was one or below, come here, and after a year, they start going back to math and saying, gee, I really do need to learn math to augment what I'm learning at Catalyst. And then their GPA is going up in their traditional subjects because they spend 2 days at Catalyst.
In Houston, Texas, in Pasadena, kids come in, they're not their high-end students.
Right.
They come in, and then all of a sudden, their test score, they're best in the district because they know why they're doing what they're doing exactly.
Yep.
It's like in my college years, I was a graphic design major, so a lot of photography and that kind of thing. And I took physics for photography. That's what they're going to get here, is math for whatever they like, and then it becomes more interesting. They like it, and it serves a purpose.
Good point.
We still believe like 25% of our students will go in the workforce, but we fully expect that 75% of these students will get more education at Dixie Tech or Utah Tech, which, by the way, they have been fantastic to work with. Jordan Rushton, the new president of Dixie Tech, has become a good friend, and they all say the same things. How can we help you guys? How can we get your students on a pathway to us? Because again, whether it's, I had S&S Mechanical, the owner there, he said, I want your construction kids. I'll send you my best techs to teach them. He just says, I need talent too. Everybody's fighting for the best kids. And if we get the best kids here, we just help our whole community, our whole county.
That's what we had a meeting the last
you know, before this one about human services and how many people need assistance and are, you know, there's so much.
That's our vision.
If anybody, if a lot of people even knew what demands there are for this trade, it was, and
these kids are picking us. Yeah. I think that's important to point out. They're saying, I want to go to that school. There's probably a few that parents that are saying, you're going to that school. But I really believe as we communicate with these kids, they're making that choice, which I think changes the whole culture of the school. You know, all of us went to schools where we walked in, that was our boundary school, that's where we were going. These kids have a choice now, and they're saying, I want to go there, which again changes it.
Well, a lot of schools have gotten rid of their industrial arts programs.
Yep.
I mean, back when I was in high school, I my senior year, I taught a night class in woodworking. And I had a key to the shop, and we broke every rule in the book. I mean, my history teacher was taking my class, and she was over there crying one night, and I said, what's wrong? She said, I didn't allow for my drawer slides. I built this dresser, and I made up my drawers wrong. And I said, I'll rebuild your drawers if you'll go out and write the report I have to do in your class tomorrow.
What about teachers? Sorry, teacher.
Real quick. Teachers.
So, again, there's two employees right now at this school.
Right.
But February 21st, in district transfers, after our spring break, we go to our interview process. I'm looking for about 30 full-time employees from a librarian to a physics teacher to a shop, like, you know, my construction teacher. So we got a lot. That's going to be a busy 3 weeks for us. But we had, I mean, to be honest, we have an IT and cybersecurity guy from the UK that virtually meets with us all the time. He happens to have a girlfriend in our dual language immersion program in St. George. So he wants to move to St. George. He came here last fall. But a lot of kids that have moved away from St. George and our teachers, they see this as a way to give back too. So I really don't see a problem hiring. In fact, it feels like there's going to be lots of competition.
Okay.
So and we'll just hire the best we can. That's always the number one point today.
And we're getting a lot of the academic teachers that want to come back to school.
High school.
Yeah.
High school. Okay.
So district wide, those math, science, and English teachers, they actually want to be there because they know those students are there with a purpose.
They see it as different.
But it might cause a problem for those schools that follow teachers, Jeff Shea.
It does. I'm the most hated guy in the district. Well, luckily I have relationships with every principal in that district, and they all know. They all get it, too. This isn't a new idea. It was kind of when I was recruiting at their school, so it kind of felt personal.
Yeah.
But we've worked through some of those things, and essentially we all came to the point where if that kid wants to be at your school, that's what we're not. I mean, that's all it is. If that teacher wants to be at your school, we're all trying to get the best teacher. You know? So they're being great.
Okay. Well, then it costs less than a normal high school because it doesn't have a lot of the
fields, extra gyms,
and so
no auditorium. They say 30% less to build our school.
No travel budget, probably, right?
But not very little, maybe for field trips and stuff like that, but no.
But it's going to allow us to not have to build another high school. It puts that out in the future. This is going to fill a gap. Yeah. So we're excited about that.
Okay. I'll let you read through this. We do have a mascot, even though we don't have sports, but kind of titans of industry. If you want to go to the next page really quick. Where is it located? So this is I-15 headed towards Las Vegas, headed south. This is that big driving range that they just put in there. People that don't golf think this is the ugliest thing ever. People that do love this thing. Anyway, if you turn right here, Southern Parkway. This is our industrial park, the River Road Industrial Park. We are basically right there. If you'll click it a few more times. We're right on the Arizona border, so that's the end of River Road. This is that new big desert color paparazzi building right there. Airport's over here. We sit right there, so keep going on this. Let me show you a couple pictures. I'll just say this, keep going. Our wall system is, we don't have any block. We don't have any brick and mortar. We don't have metal doors with small windows. We chose to use a wall system that comes from the acronym DIRT. And maybe you guys have heard of that acronym before. Do It Right This Time. It has nothing to do with dirt, but everybody's like, what, dirt walls? What's going on with you guys? It's very open, modern. I'd say it's closer to an Apple, Microsoft Google type of feel. It's extremely open. This picture was taken just a few weeks ago. That's the front of our building. If you just want to keep going, front of the building. That's just artist rendering. Oh, there's a couple I want to hit on here. We have this really cool, so as you enter our school, the one of the huge differences that the architect built into this is an interior courtyard that literally will probably host wedding receptions in it. It's phenomenal. And there's this big second story bridge walkway. The main office is right here. But we're just super excited. It's so different. And if we can get kids in, here's part of this artist renderings of the courtyard. If you hit the next one, it's kind of, this was taken about a month ago, but you kind of get a feel for what we are. Click it there. They actually, again, we're new, we're different. This is going to be a barbecue in our courtyard. There's big pergolas, teaching areas out in the courtyard, and the whole school wraps around it. This is looking down on our courtyard. These are all trees. That's going to be a teaching area, a place to sit coming out for lunch. That's our commons area. A lot of the new high schools are going to this, but it's a gathering stair. That looks out to the courtyard. You can kind of get a feel for what we are. That's the new big construction. There's the crane in the top. Click on the next one if you would. That was the commercial kitchen. You can't get a really great feel for it, but it's just being loaded with stainless steel, and it's amazing. We've had so many professional people, chefs, reach out and say, I want to teach. And so it's been a huge response to the culinary performance.
It's interesting because the graduation rate at Dixie Tech on their culinary, the graduation rate is one thing, but placement rate, 100%.
Yeah, there's a
everyone
need.
Gets a job.
And tourism and hospitality is part of that. Utah Tech's opening up a tourism and hospitality major, does a bachelor's degree next year, so that plays right into us. These are kind of what our walls will look like, a lot like this, the dirt wall system. Very open, very, teachers won't have classrooms, they have little offices, and so it's very university-like. We'll just mm-hmm. assign them. They can go just plug and teach in any one of our classrooms. But this is the idea. The way this is built right now, they're starting to put flooring around today. They'll put all the flooring down, and then they put the walls in and run everything down into the walls. It's really a cool system. It's even flexible. If we don't like some of the spaces, we can change them over the summer. We'll just say, we need this bigger, this smaller, and they'll come in and do it. This was a question asked earlier, but we're a learning by doing school for sure. Go ahead. Just vision-wise, we have this idea. Next one. This right here is huge to me. Over the last 8 years, I've seen, and if you have seniors or no seniors, you know this is true. We have made senior year a joke in public education.
Yeah.
We need to wrestle it back so kids aren't laying on couches every other day with phones in their hands. We want to say you're going to do an internship with us, an apprenticeship, a capstone. It might be at UTU, it might be at Dixie Tech, but you're going to be busy. I actually think we lost a bunch of seniors when we said that. It's sad, but I truly feel like we somehow have to wrestle that back, that it's some gap year before whatever, and it's wrong. It's not good for 17-year-olds, I'm telling you. So anyway, graduation is the minimum standard, but really we're just looking at big stuff, work skills development, professional skills development, leadership development. Yeah, just keep rolling if you would through that. Give it one more on that. You know, just build better people, like I said earlier. Just hit that above. That's, yeah, just keep it. Click that a bunch of times until it stops with a big word right up here. Oops. Oh, yeah, you're good. He didn't have room for my clicker. He's got too many cords on there. But anyway, this is our goal. But that's what a pathway is to us. We're employment's important, but additional training's more important. You know, whatever, we just want to make, again, that CEP, that customized education plan. So a kid that goes into our health science, they can do what they might want to be an athletic trainer. They might want to be a physician. They might want to be a physical trainer, a physical therapist. They could be so many things, and we want to help them get there. Yeah, just keep going. I kind of mentioned that. So we will have social activities. We'll do everything from student council. Just go ahead and click that a bunch of times. dances. They're building a seminary building next to our property. The LDS Church bought that. That's big in our community. People want that. Assemblies, clubs. Yeah, just click on through that. Keep going. We want leadership in our school. We want adults saying, this is what this is like. This will kind of be our sports. There's a lot of what we call CTSOs, these student career organizations, FCLA. We want to compete and be great at these. These are kind of our sports. And every one of our pathways will be associated to one of these groups, and some of you might be familiar with those.
Is this Skills USA? That used to be DECA.
No, there still is.
Yes.
It is DECA. It got eaten up by DECA. So, yeah, that would be the woodworking and kind of the construction side. But, yeah. Go ahead and keep going. I'm almost done. Our website with tons of information. Keep going on that. We talked enrollment a little bit, so I won't mention too much here. It's going to give you some real, just keep clicking, because we answered that one. This is what we're going to have, 225, click that two more times. And so that's really where we think we'll settle. We're going to reopen our application process to seniors and juniors, and we'll just keep taking them as long as they want to come. Next slide. More questions, I'm done.
Yeah. So is it just Washington County, or can some...
Well, anybody can buy a home down there and pay non-primary taxes.
Yes, but you should know that they're not just our students. We've taken homeschool students and students from our charter schools as well. So it's all of our kids. And technically, if somebody wanted to drive down from... See, like, we have a couple Water Canyon kids that are committed, and a couple kids from Enterprise. I keep saying, are you sure you want to drive down here for 3 or 4 years? And they're so excited, they say yes, at least now.
They probably have family down
there. There's no bus route, I would assume.
We are going to bus from every high school to CTHS.
Oh, you are.
Like a shuttle, so there and back. Mm. So that's kind of how we're working. We will transport them from our high schools to CTHS and then back. And we're starting a little bit early, ending a little bit early, so for that sports piece, they get back to the practices.
Right.
And I believe if they can get to a bus that goes to the high school, they can drive to there, hop on that bus, and then we'll transport them from the high school to the tech. So it's open for everybody, the whole district. It's huge. It's big, big area.
So this will be a game changer. When you're talking about even kids that are homeschooled, I really believe that will be the case. I know my son, Willie, that you were with him, that you were the coach for football, he had a math teacher that he actually went and kept enrolling in his math class in different classes. I said, son, you've already taken that class. He goes, I know, but I just want to take it. So he ended up rebuilding his snowmobile to get an A. And he would go in and he'd help him do stuff every day. He would go in after school because his math teacher was so good. And it's that kind of thing. If you can get someone to rebuild your snowmobile to get an A after you do, that was his extra credit.
Yeah.
To rebuild the teacher's snowmobile engine, his motor. And so I'm just saying, that's part of it is him on stop and you
it's
learn
kids
your
that
math.
Fit at yes? high school. It's not for every kid.
Right.
For sure. But
there's
some.
A lot that need hands-on kinesthetic learning.
You didn't know this principal, but when you were standing there and the light was shining and things would shine off your head.
Yes.
But it was a time when you were still and it was perfect because it said CTH right S. Giant tattoo.
Well, you used to have more hair that would have blocked
it. It was perfect.
It worked pretty fast. So I'll be a little bit more careful.
You're so dedicated.
I'm all in for sure. Yeah.
Well, thank you. That's really neat and really informative.
Great job.
You definitely caught our interest there.
All right.
So, if I may, if I could be excused, Principal Homer has an appointment, and we need to get him to it. So.
Thank you.
And Cindy will give my report.
Thanks, Dave, too. Dave,
okay,
thank
very
you.
Good.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dave.
That's a good word.
So next we have the wood biomass in region board discussion and possible action. It doesn't have a particular... Oh, that's me.
Come on up. This packet here, part of the packet, did you... Everybody have it?
Yeah.
Okay.
So just to introduce myself again, I'm Bergen Eskelson. I'm with the Utah Division of Forestry, Fire, and State Lands, and I'm the Forest Products Businesses Program Coordinator. And so just wanted to give a little bit of background about this bioeconomy development opportunity initiative and how we've been involved as the state. So we first heard of this group from my regional counterpart at the U.S. Forest Service Region 4. She pretty much does what I do, helping different businesses and entrepreneurs get connected to different local, state, and federal resources. And with that, just trying to stimulate economic capacity for new market opportunities for wood products and forest products. And so she was the one who recommended this consulting group to us. We had been in talks with Summit County, who was looking at a possible biofuels developer, who was looking at their area to locate a biofuels plant. And they ended up going with a county in Colorado instead. And it wasn't because the feedstock wasn't there, it was just some other factors. And so Summit County was still interested in recruiting industry and recruiting some type of wood products processing or utilization facility. So with that, I introduced this BDO zone group to Summit County, and Summit County was on board and very interested in working through this initiative. So basically, it's an analysis, and you guys have the handout in front of you, so glad you have that resource. But basically, just to sum it up, it's an analysis they do to show where biomass feedstock is located. So for the case in this area down in Five County, we know that there's a lot of feedstock, both on the federal Forest Service lands and then also on just like BLM, juniper, a lot of juniper as well. So basically with this initiative, they do an analysis to show that feedstock's there, and then it promotes, they give you an A or double A rating based on what they find with that analysis. And then after that, they help connect you with their network of project developers and investors. That's kind of the key part we saw in the value of this. It's not just an analysis to show, hey, we have this material. It goes beyond that, and it connects you to this network of businesses who are looking to expand and looking for these kinds of indicators that show that this will be a successful area for biofuels plant, biochar plant, any type of business that utilizes wood and wood waste, essentially. And with that too, I know there's going to be a lot of projects going on the forest around here. We just got the 10-year wildfire crisis funding from the federal government for the Pine Valley project down on Pine Valley, and then just lots of other projects going on in the forest. So we see this as an opportunity to bring in business that will utilize wood waste that would otherwise just be burned in piles. We'd like to see some economic value put to that. So basically, we see this as a powerful tool to attract businesses. And so I know you guys have that handout, and I did bring, I should have printed more of these, but I brought a couple like reports that we have so far from Summit County and what we've seen this group do. So if anyone is interested in looking at those, I can.
If you get one to Gary, we can scan it and send it out.
Bergen, are they just clear cutting pinyon juniper and?
So it depends on for this initiative or just in general, or
when they actually are boots on the ground.
Yeah, so it depends project specific. So I know WRI is doing a lot of work with the pinyon juniper. So I guess it just depends on the specific project, whether they do clear cutting or lock and scatter, mastication. I guess it just depends what type of treatment you use based on the landscape.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So many of you may have read the letter of Dia Theodore. She's a councilwoman in Salt Lake, I think District 6, and Celeste sent this letter to me. And she's a biologist and was talking about, what is it, Cottonwood Canyons, big little Cottonwood Canyons, and how if they, I think that, if my memory serves me correct, I think 10 or 12 trees per acre is healthy. We've got 200 trees per acre, and if they were just to thin these forests, in 5 years, it would solve the Great Salt Lake's water problem. And that's true throughout the state. I mean, you're you can take the, if you can take the PJ and the, you know, clear our forests and use that. There was even that in the Phil Lyman representative, he has a Yellow Cake Caucus legislature every Thursday morning, and they had a guy from San Rafael where he's doing studies on coal's getting more scarce, and they're actually doing studies on using, you know PJ and forest materials to fuel power plants. And so, I mean, it seems like that's a win-win. I mean, we're getting rid of the encroachment of the PJ, you know, saving our watershed and using that as a fuel. So I hope we can, it sounds like we're making some progress, but I hope we can, you know, get away from some of these environmentalists who keep suing to shut these things down and you know, do you feel like we're moving forward?
Yeah.
Making progress?
And I think we're moving forward, and I think there's a lot of funding coming down for forestry-specific projects. I think the biggest need right now within the forest products industry is just building up that workforce and providing that training, which is why it's great to follow. Mr. Homer, who was up here to talk about some of those skills that we need to develop. So I think that's the biggest thing there, but we'll continue to look at innovative ways to use that material. We just really want to get away from pile burning, and if we're already going to the work to do thinning or mastication or what have you, might as well put that to an economic use. So just wasting it.
So the timber that would be considered killed by the bark beetle, mm-hmm. that would be a resource.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of what we're targeting as an agency and the federal government as well. I know they're really trying to get a lot of that dead or burned and small diameter material out that's kind of crowding the forest.
Are they going to sell those? The way I look at it, if we don't use the biomass, the Forest Service is going to go in and burn it.
Yep.
And that's a cost.
Yep.
They do that right. As a cost. I honestly think what they ought to do is take some of those areas that if there's going to burn them, to give them to some of these businesses, say you can go in as long as you and you can hold their feet to the fires, supposedly, but so that they clean it out the way that it should be, but actually give them that material, that product. I think it would be cheaper, plus it would create jobs and opportunities in our areas, mm-hmm. in our rural areas, rather than they have to go in and buy it.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. I'm glad you brought up that point, because we see that, I think the Forest Service recognizes that. They haven't traditionally had people that want to come and take this wood waste material, but now we're seeing a lot more interest in biofuel producers. I've been working with one company in particular called Juniper Fuels, who's actually looking at this area in particular with the Juniper and the Forest Service land to utilize a lot of that material. And we're working with the Forest Service just because they haven't done that before, and I know they can't sell it for completely free, but they've already said that they can do it for a very nominal.
I think a dollar an acre ought to be great.
Yeah, something mm-hmm. like that. So.
They would put $100 in their pocket where it would cost them hundreds of thousands of dollars if they take the firefighters in and burn it.
Exactly. And this is kind of like a chicken before the egg thing, too. It's like once we have this analysis in place and it's complete, we can show that to companies such as Juniper Fuels, who I'm working with, who's trying to get investors right now, and they can take that to investors and say, hey, this has been backed by this initiative that's also backed by the Department of Energy and Idaho National Labs and that sort of thing.
So this group here was looking for tonnage, right? Annual tonnage. Mm-hmm. Did you calculate, is that something that we do have in this region?
Yep, yeah, so okay. I think there is quite a bit of material, and then they're also working with, so through our process with Summit County, we've been working with, so they have their own data, big data sets, but they're also ground truthing that, and that's what those documents I provided were, like the initial phases of their analysis. They go beyond the data they have and actually work with specific people from the Forest Service who worked with timber management officers, silviculturists, and forest supervisors to help ground truth that data and clear up any discrepancies there are.
And I'm so glad you're here to present to the board, because this group, there was a few of us, right, county commissioners and others that were on a phone call with this, and we wanted to bring it to the steering committee. But the ask here is this application that costs $100,000 Is that right? Is that
yes? Yeah.
Can the state help with that? I mean.
So we are looking at ways to help with that, but we do see that rural development block grant. They recently announced that this would qualify for that being an eligible expense. So we see that as a good opportunity. I guess I'm not sure exactly who would be best to write that grant, or if you know people within your area or one of your counties that.
Because the grant deadline is the end of February.
Yeah, and that's right. Super tight turnaround.
Yes.
And that's the federal.
And then the other question I have to follow up is, so if this zone were to be created in the region here, would somebody like this Juniper Fuels, would that be of benefit to them, or do they need a designation like this?
So I do think it would be a benefit just because they could take that to investors to show. Okay. I think that's the biggest thing is anyone, not just Juniper Fuels, but any company who's interested in producing some type of biofuel or wood product could take that to the bank and say, hey, we know that this is there, because that's one of the biggest hesitancies of the banks is providing loans because they can't guarantee that supply. So this is kind of that backbone of guaranteeing.
It seems like some of this water money being thrown around, you know, with lemonade straws in the aquifer, it seems like some of the water money being thrown around could be used for some of this. Maybe our federal delegation could let us know what their folks could do to help us with this.
Or maybe even just if someone could come to our counties and say, oh, there's no way, you definitely don't have enough fuel, or yes, you probably do have enough fuel, just to let us know what the feasibility of being accepted into their AA or whatever program. I'm feeling like we don't have $100,000 or $200,000 to put into a maybe, and especially because, like, for our county, we're 6% land that isn't owned by the feds or the state, and we don't really understand. I asked this question during the Zoom meeting that Brian referred to, but we don't understand what the roadblocks will be even if we do get this rating, because all the biomass might be on, or most of it might be on, land that we don't have access to. And so how easy is it or isn't it to work with the feds and or the state on this? There's a lot of, like, maybes for $100,000, and there's like no grease on our train tracks here. We need
we need some type of guarantee that we're going to be able to go in and get that biomass for actually a long time and not have some selfish interest group shut us down, because that's, people don't want to invest. They don't want to invest a lot of dollars in this and then turn around a year later being sued by, you know, the special interest groups, and it shuts their whole project down. Not only that, but between Kane County and Garfield County, we have 1.9 million acres of monument that if you took a limb off of one of their juniper trees or cedar trees, they'd have you in jail.
They don't want you to have vehicular access to most of that land.
So it's a battle that way, even though I agree it's very important. I think we ought to do something with it. I think we need to push it, but there's going to be a battle.
We want to be part of this. We really do, for many reasons, what Commissioner Cousins was mentioning, and for our economic diversification so that we won't be so tourism dependent, and on for the health of our forest and of our watersheds. And we just are seeing some significant roadblocks. So.
Yeah, well, and you guys brought up some good points, and I think some of the things I can speak to that are, with Summit County specifically, they've done like a phased approach where this analysis has been done in three phases. So I think phase one was like $14,000 or something like that, and that was just to do their preliminary analysis that determines whether they're pretty sure you get an A or AA. And so if they don't think that you will get that A or AA, they'll stop there and they won't go beyond the phases. So I don't know if they...
That's the first time we're hearing this.
Yeah. So. Yeah, and I don't know if that was specific to Summit County or if that's how they've done it with other municipalities and counties and whatnot. But so that's definitely a valid concern.
I think there's something that obviously this group sees in our region. is because they didn't reach out to any of the other.
It's all the Beatles killed, right?
Is that what it is?
So that grant,
they see all our forests.
Is that the whole five counties, or is that just one county?
That could be a county. That could be a special service district area. It could be.
But is it
five counties?
Are five counties, or is that enough to do that, or is it?
For me, I would like to see it five county. That you know, you like right now, you can see Pine Valley. It's ready. The Forest Service has money right there now. To be able to work in that area, and as that area is being worked on, another area in the region on the Fish Lake could happen.
Well, there's a ton of, you know, that Sheriff's Stewardship's going up there right now like crazy because
of
the state of Utah. So
yeah.
I think, so, I mean, if there's money out there to give, we should try to get it and do it, you know?
We're at least addressing a Pine Valley where it's been wilderness area has been problematic because we have had people come in and things out of there. Well, I just would like to see, I mean, general RFQ, or what happens to make sure that whoever asks for this funding and for the supply, that it's distributed appropriately, that when a company comes in, is any company, or is it only the first five, or how is that decided to?
I think this is to set up the zone. And then the companies come in.
Yeah, sir. Yeah, right. Yeah. Companies coming after it, and it's kind of to recruit industry. So like right now in my position, I'm working with Jim for Fuels. I've had a couple other companies that are interested, but my biggest struggle, I guess, is trying to find those people who are interested, and whether that's at a nationwide scale or even, I don't know, international scale. Just getting people in who have the ability to create a plan like this.
Do you have a grant format so that Five County can follow it, or do you have somebody else who's written a grant we can copy with changing names?
I don't know. If
that's Brian. Could you?
Yeah. I don't know if I have that.
This group here said they will write the grant for us. We just sign it, right?
Really?
That's the $100,000, right? And they will write everything there. So.
Okay. That's.
So this is an action possibly
requires a motion and vote. What is that?
We can't commit any dollars,
right?
Yeah, that's the piece on this. Yeah.
Well, I guess but question for you is, so they're saying they'd help you write the grant if you paid them $100,000 to get the grant.
Yes.
That pays for their study.
Is that what they're saying?
Yeah, so some grants that they're writing are $180,000, but they said for our region they would do it bare minimum, $100,000.
Well, yeah, I guess my impression was I had seen that the Rural Development Block Grant was released to allow for this money, so I wasn't aware of that back kind of backstory of things, but if we could get someone, or if someone in the county would be able to spearhead writing that grant, I know that's a lot of work on the person's part, but.
So would that be an action that the AOG might do, the grant writing piece of it, or would one of our economic development people be? I'm just chairing the meeting. I don't know what's going on. So what happened in this situation, for example, if we wanted to do an AOG joint five county grant, I could see you talking about McGill.
I wasn't talking about you. I was saying that was a famous Nancy Pelosi quote.
Oh, great.
I'm just sharing the meeting. I don't know what's going on.
Order.
I think you're doing a great job.
We need to pass it so we know what's in it.
Yeah, right. Anyway, I'm trying to do two things, wrap up this discussion and also have us have an understanding of a path forward. What might our path forward be on this? And
Five County writes a grant. Or Five County calls up somebody who says, you know, I like Jerry said, we can't say we're giving you $100,000.
Yeah, that's,
yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. I think Five County should do it.
Do we have people in Five County that can write grants?
I'd have to look at it.
Okay, so not Brian. I'm learning that. Okay. But somebody.
That's what I was saying. If you could have a template to follow.
Yeah.
Somebody else has done
it. I'd like to work with Bergen to see what.
Yeah.
If I can work with Bergen.
So,
but I'm not going to help with that person too, who's writing that grant, but I see that as probably the best way forward. If you have someone, the capacity is there for someone within one of your counties or in your area to write that.
So we have a bang-up grant writer person. And so maybe they would speak with Brian and coordinate with you and Brian?
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
Possibly?
That's super nice, Celeste. Thank you for volunteering your grant writer to do that for us.
Yeah, I think as a chair with all that power, she's done the right thing.
It's gone to my head already. Okay, so our economic developer, I will put our economic development person in touch with Brian and Bergen.
Yeah.
And they can forge a path forward if...
I mean, I think other people are aware of this. Like, I know that Beaver County's economic developers too, because we've had these conversations before. So, I mean, I think there's people that know about this, this situation.
Yeah.
For sure.
And is this me saying that? Is that requiring a motion and a vote, or is that just... discussion and
it needs to come back after you talk to grant writer.
Okay, action item for only one person, which is me. Okay. Next, we're
Bergen,
hoping.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Bergen. Sorry to dismiss you so abruptly.
So, who is your economic
job? It's Kelly Stoll.
Oh,
yeah. Next, we have the Utah legislative session ongoing discussion, and we're hoping for 10 minutes on this one. I feel like we should start right off the bat talking about the BNC roads. It's HB 175, I believe. Jerry, do you want to, Commissioner Taylor, would you like to frame that up, or would you like me to?
Go ahead if you like.
Okay, so Lincoln Shirts has kind of been the lobbyist behind getting this together with basically a lot of the rural counties and then also some of the urban counties to basically count noses and get a vote on more or less every county that goes into it would get about $5 million one-time appropriations for improvements. And so each of our counties submitted things that we would want to be projects they would want to use the money for. So we could say either just like maintenance, you know, $5 million for maintenance on roads for such and such county, or specifically call out roads, but at any point. That's just for BNC roads, and then they were going to try to have a fund where a little bit of money would come off of that on an ongoing basis. Yeah, do I have that much right?
I don't. Is it 175? Because I
HB 175? Darren,
Senate Bill 175.
SB 175, I'm sorry. It's Darren Owens that's running this one. And it was going along pretty well, we thought. And then I guess Cameron Deal with Utah League of Cities and Towns got a hold of it, and they are against it. Maybe there's a perception that if the counties get that much roads, the cities wouldn't get the roads or something along those lines. There's a hearing about this tomorrow at 8 a.m. in the Senate building, room 220, up at the Capitol. But in the meantime, we could all contact our mayors mayors to contact Cameron Deal of Utah League of Cities and Towns to say, hey, what up? Because our cities are islands that are connected to the mainland of commerce via these BNC roads a lot of times. And so if our roads are healthy, our county roads are healthy, our city economies are healthy. So
part of the problem I see, too, is the big cities along the Wasatch Front, mm-hmm. we are their playground, mm-hmm. and they come down here. We have to maintain those roads mm-hmm. that they drive on.
So action item is to contact your mayors. That's why I keep looking at Mayor Golding.
Yeah, there's four mayors in here right now.
Yeah.
Five,
and
four?
Ask them to please contact Cameron Deal.
Well, five, I guess, but Mayor Greenland.
Immediately. To try to get Utah League of Cities and Towns to back off of this one. We've worked so hard on this piece of legislation, and like for our county, Kane County, to get $5.5 million for roads improvement would be huge, but with the hold harmless and all that other stuff, we're just bleeding out. You know, we can't even bring our roads up to grade and then maintain them. We're just like throwing a little bit of tar at this giant wreck, you know. Anyway.
Did you say it's House Bill 175?
I said it's Senate Bill 175. Senate Bill 175. I did say House Bill, but that was wrong. So that's, is there any more to add about that? Okay. Thank you. That's going to, you know, require some texts and phone calls to our mayors. And then if anyone's available tomorrow morning, 8 a.m., Senate Building 220, Room 220, come on by. Okay. Any other legislative stuff that's really a big deal? I mean, what isn't, but...
I'm still hoping we just send the legislature on an all-expense-paid cruise for 45 days in the G5.
One way.
All right, thank you for that.
Well, yeah. Well, we certainly should have some pushback on a couple of bills. One where they do away with the recorder.
Yeah.
I think that's going to die.
That's Jordan's, right?
That's Tusher.
That's death.
Well, they...
They compromised.
They compromised, but they still can't find a recorder in the state except maybe one who's willing to speak for it. So that tells you something.
Exactly. It's terrible.
The other one is that we need to make sure the legislature and be careful that they start doing all of our land planning for us, where they take away commissioners' rights to plan our own counties.
Are you talking about 174?
You know, it could be one of 1,074 bills that they've written that take away local authority.
Grabbing rights.
Mm-hmm. So
I don't think we'll be able to fight that one, though. It's been in the works for over a year, at a minimum. It's got tons of backing. They're working on a little compromise, but that's a steamroller.
Can I bring up one that primarily, well, it affects both counties and cities, but it's on affordable housing that puts a stick, a very big stick, if you don't comply with the current requirements for a annual or semi-annual, it's an annual update of your status of there, that they will fine the entity. And that's the first time I've ever seen the state of Utah say, we're going to fine a political subdivision for not complying with the law. I mean, I don't know what other...
They were going to take your BNC road funds originally, and Leland, Commissioner Pollock stood up through a Fed, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you, Gary. Anything else when we're on the Utah legislative topic?
We're working on a couple of bills. One, Representative Ellison just sent me the bill number, but it's for EMS services that they're looking for a revision. Currently, any of the counties that are third class to sixth class counties, that you can adopt that. Mm-hmm. And well, we have a national park, which is state parks. We're working on that one. Also, to maybe fund a little bit of money in the state parks road fund, because we have Hurricane City, the road on Sand Hollow is the only road that's a city street that goes to a state park. So those are just specific for our area, but I don't know if that's something any of you have an interest or have some kind of need, some state park funding for roads that are in your area. That might be something that you can piggyback on there.
No, we have county roads that go to state parks, like Coral Peak Sand Dunes.
So that's probably, and that one has, that's a tough one to, yeah.
Do you know the number?
I don't.
Okay.
I can probably.
Do you know who's pushing it?
No. But I just know that Walters is talking about it, so, but I don't know.
You have that number on the EMS bill yet?
I do. The EMS bill, I do.
Text you right now.
Is House Bill 392.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, wonderful. Thank you. We're
SB 114, County Correctional Facility. Darren Owens, and it's making headway. Looks like that would be a really good thing. It's they're basically going to make it more standard. So it raises the state inmate rates that they pay the counties per day, right? You guys could probably explain better than I can, but I don't think we have to go begging every year.
Right.
You guys explain better than I can. Anyway, that's a good bill. I think we need to support.
SB 104, and then also SJR 10 helps the sheriffs quite a bit. The Senate Joint Resolution 10. I think that one's put forth by Speaker Wilson and President Adams, so we can just hopefully watch it coast into finish.
So I got an email back from Evan Vickers about SB 175.
Mm-hmm.
He said they aren't happy, but I made it very clear to him yesterday, who's just Cameron, that he better figure out a way to get on board and steer him back me up. Exploring options and have a meeting tomorrow. This is a big priority for me. So,
yeah.
Good.
That was from Senator.
That was from Senator Owens.
Senator
Vickers. Okay. All right. Thank you all. In the interest of time,
the Senate Bill 174 is the one on the moderate income housing.
Yeah.
On there, and the fine would go to the Bowling Walker Housing Fund. And the amount would be determined by the length of time the jurisdictions that remains out of compliance. So there's a lot of icky parts into this that haven't been determined yet.
It's an omnibus kind of, it's got a lot of parts to it, which our bills aren't supposed to have that many parts, but
there's also there's a huge amount of land use bills in this particular legislative session. One of those deals with temporary land use ordinances, which has a big effect on some communities that are trying to get caught up to trying to comply with the previous stuff, so they don't call them moratoriums. Moratoriums not found anywhere in land use, anywhere in state law, but there's temporary land use ordinances. Now they're throwing a monkey wrench into those as well, so be looking at all the land use ordinances.
Yeah, maybe we can talk more about legislative once the meeting's over. For now, we'll have congressional staff updates.
We usually have state legislators come in April to talk about the session.
Mm-hmm. Why are you telling me that? Because are you saying that there's no congressional staff updates?
Oh, no. I was just to conclude the legislative session.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right, thank you. Okay.
Yeah, we do have.
Yes, go. Yes. It's your turn. You only get 5 minutes. At the max.
Okay. So it's a slow week in the Senate. I'll do a real condensed version. AUMs are staying at $1.35 for anybody to whom that's relevant. Pine Valley is one of 21 priority landscapes designated in the United States to receive extra funding and some expedited NEPA should it be necessary. It's a 400,000-acre landscape that was designated. 189,000 acres will receive treatments from lop and scatter to mastication, prescribed burns, some timber sales to try to convert a lot of that pinyon juniper into grass, improve the ecology of the mountain, improve our watershed and the runoff thereof. It's a huge win for our area. It's a mountain that I take a lot of personal ownership of, and so I really like to see it. To see that happen. So we're super stoked about that, really happy about it. One of the reasons there is so much interest from private industry about timber sales, for example, is I think this is going to take all hands on deck to complete that volume of work. And so the more partners who are willing to participate in that, the better. Are there any questions about that before I move on? Because frankly, that's my favorite thing to talk about. No? Okay. It's a farm bill year. Democrats are teeing up a fight over climate initiatives that could potentially be included in the farm bill, which we obviously don't want to see. That's something that we're monitoring and or pushing back against. And lastly, some of you may be familiar with the Trust Act, but we are hoping to get that Trust Act included in part of the debt ceiling negotiation. Not sure that's going to happen, but we're crossing our fingers. And because we only vote on about a third of federal spending, the other two-thirds are compulsory, they're entitlements. The Trust Act creates some commissions and some of those entitlements are going to not be solvent in the next 10 or 15 years. And so that Trust Act of Create Commission is that were alluded to in the State of the Union last night to look at some of those entitlements and to see how we can shore them up so we don't run into a problem. So I'm grateful to be here. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Kyle.
Thank you.
Great. Do you want to hear Lee's people still?
Yep. Great. So just going back to the wood products discussion, as a delegation, we're always happy to help any way we can with that. We had a call with the regional forester last week or 2 weeks ago, and we really tried to drill down to this point of, it seems that there's, the Forest Service says, oh, we've got all this wood available, we're putting it up for almost nothing, we're offering extended contracts, and we're hearing from industry that they can't access the wood, so we're really trying to figure out what the obstacles are there. Mm-hmm. And from the Forest Service perspective, at least, it really comes down to a lack of capacity to do the work. So the way that the regional forest explained it is that, you know, they're able to offer 10-year contracts. They're able to offer these timber sales for almost nothing. The problem is the Forest Service has received an influx of money now. They need to spend that money now. They can't wait for 5 or 10 years for industry to finally get around to doing the work. So really anything that the state, the counties, local governments, anyone can do to build up that capacity, the Forest Service has the money. They seem very willing to work with industry, but we've got to come up with the capacity to allow the Forest Service to turn to industry rather than just doing prescribed burns or burning whatever it is they're slashing. So mm-hmm. anything that we can do to help with on the capacity side, please let us know, because that really seems to me to be the biggest hurdle.
Have you called Fish Lake Lumber and see what their capacity is to just get wood?
Have you?
I know their number, but Fish Lake is always looking for wood everywhere.
Yeah, that's what we're trying to figure out, is why the Forest Service seems to be saying we're trying to sell it, industry saying we can't find enough. We're trying to figure out where the miscommunication is coming there.
Yeah.
I know we've been having those conversations for a long time. For some reason, the solution eludes us. So that's what we're still trying to work with the Forest Service and industry to figure out. But it seems that capacity is one of the major hurdles. As Kyle mentioned, it's kind of slow. We finally got our organizing resolution put together. So we've got committee assignments. Yeah. Senator Lee will remain on the Energy and Natural Resources and Judiciary and Joint Economic Committees. In a bit of a surprise, and it seems to be a retaliation from Senator McConnell. Senator Lee did not vote for Senator McConnell to be the minority leader, and so Senator McConnell kicked him and Senator Rick Scott off of the Commerce Committee. Mm-hmm. So Senator Lee will no longer be a part of the Commerce Committee, which he's disappointed about. He will be on the Budget Committee, but he will no longer be on the Commerce Committee. State of the Union. I'm sure if anyone watched that last night.
What's that?
Commissioner Almquist compared the 117th Congress to Why We Sleep.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Compare it to the State of the Union.
Yeah, well, that's okay. I thought you were going to go the other direction.
Well, now everybody wants to know.
And it's hilarious because this comedian was saying, she's holding a constitution, she said, the second thing we wrote was, everybody, you better get a gun. But the first was, say anything you want, but you better get a gun. And when he said he's going to ban assault rifles, it's just, there's a lot of things that are really, and it's not that it's scary, because we have a constitutional interest.
Yeah. And a Bill of Rights.
Yeah, right?
The most unique State of the Union speech I've ever experienced in my lifetime. Yeah. But Senator Lee invited Governor Cox to be his guest, and so Senator Lee can go on, you might see it on the news, but Senator Lee and Governor Cox gave a response to the State of the Union. And really, the state of Utah and Senator Lee seem to be on the same page with regard to the State of the Union proves why we need to get back to federalism.
Yeah.
The states, especially Utah,
yeah.
let us govern ourselves, and we don't need the federal government telling us how to do things. So Senator Lee and Governor Cox are on the same page there, and they're going to continue to work together to try to bring federalism back into its proper perspective.
That'd be great. Dare I say it, if they're all on the same page, transfer of public lands would be something we would jump at the chance to have some momentum on.
I think we could manage our own lands.
Yeah.
I believe that we have that capacity.
Mm-hmm. And that's, Senator Lee's been making that argument since he's been in the Senate, and unfortunately we can't get a critical mass of senators.
Yeah, I hear you. And you know, we're kind of trying to gain some traction with the AG's office to have, you know, bring some things to the Supreme Court, and this might be a good time for it. And it's just a little bit right now of like Scooby-Doo cartoon where they run before they start moving. Maybe.
I don't want to be treated special, but I do want to be treated the same. I want to be treated the same as those other states mm-hmm. have been treated.
Yeah.
If they give Wyoming and Alaska an exemption, I believe that we, the people of Utah, deserve that same exemption. Okay?
Yeah.
No, you're absolutely right. And that's another thing that Senator Lee has fought tooth and nail in every public lands package that's come up during his tenure. And it's been railroaded every time, but he'll continue to fight for that, because especially with when it comes to the Antiquities Act, Utah has suffered more than its share.
I know he tries to stay in his lane, but if he's talking with Spencer anyway, maybe Spencer could talk to Sean. We could just get a little momentum that we can't generate on our own at this moment.
I just don't know what we're afraid of. We're afraid to take our own rights.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Speaking of being afraid, we had the $31.4 trillion debt ceiling back in January, and the Treasury Department has been executing emergency measures to pay the bills. I think they continue to do that until about June 4th. At that point, if they don't raise the debt ceiling, the federal government will be unable to pay its debts. And so that's the big debate on Capitol Hill right now, is the debt ceiling. Democrats just want to do a clean increase. Many Republicans think that would be incredibly irresponsible. Considering that the debt ceiling was $6 trillion in the year 2000, we're now at almost $32 trillion. And we keep raising it and raising it without any meaningful spending cuts. So Senator Lee led a letter in the Senate to President Biden stating that he and the 23 other senators who signed the letter will not agree to any debt limit increase unless there are also substantive spending cuts or controls on spending moving forward. Now, unfortunately, that's only 24 members of the Senate, meaning there's a lot more that didn't agree to that. So that was disappointing, but Senator Lee is continuing to work with Republicans on the House side and in the Senate to try to get meaningful spending cuts or controlled spending within this debt ceiling negotiation. Senator Lee has his Price Act, which would limit the amount of spending the Senate could approve in any period where inflation is above 3%. He'd like to see that included. He's open to any and all ideas to get spending under control, because we cannot continue down this road. We've already seen the inflationary effects of the spending, and we just cannot continue down this road, and we need more people to acknowledge that and actually stand up and do something about it.
I know that I'm only a county commissioner, but something I've learned in my life is that you cannot borrow your way out of debt.
So smart.
Yeah, and the fact of the matter is, we benefit from very low interest rates on our debt. The second that interest rates start to go up on that $31.4 trillion, I mean, even a small increase in the interest rate, send our interest payments skyrocketing. And at that point, it's probably untenable right now, but the second the interest rates start rising on our debt, it becomes even more impossible to get under control. So the time was years ago to get this under control. We didn't do it then. So now more than ever, we've got to insist that Congress rein in spending. So that's the fight that Senator Lee is going to be fighting for the next few months.
So, very good. If anyone wants to talk more, I suggest maybe after the meeting, if you'll still be available.
Just real quick, I got to say this. So if you compare, just we throw around billions and millions and trillions like nothing. But if you compare money to time, 1 million seconds is 12 days. 1 billion seconds is 32 years. 1 trillion seconds is 32,000 years. So that just gives you kind of perspective on how much money we're.
Mm-hmm. I'll be fast. Congressman Stewart has been given his committee assignments. He is on appropriations, and within appropriations, he's on state foreign operations and related programs, defense subcommittee, and interior, which is environment and other related. So those are some pretty important appropriations committees. He's also been put on the that new weaponization of government that's investigating some of those, I don't know, overreach of government programs and committee or organizations that are way stepping out of line. Anyway, and then on a mental health caucus, he has, and then on intelligence, so he's on some really important committees. He does agree that we are spending too much money, and at the same time, if they are going to do appropriations, and then he's going to be there fighting that we can get as much as we can back in Utah. He knows better than to say, okay, I disagree, we're not going to take any money. It's once they've decided that budget, 1% of that goes in for community project funding, and he will be there fighting to get as much as he can for his district, for Utah. To that, we are getting ready for community project funding. We're hoping that, or we're thinking that that period will be opening up. So while we are in recess in D.C., we've got some staff members, and we're going to be holding some office hours at the Capitol on from the 22nd, 23rd, and 24th of February. So if your counties or communities are looking at community project funding, we will set up specific meetings where you can come in and one-on-one say, hey, we need to do a fire project, you know, a fire station. What do we need to get ready? Or we've got this water project, we've got this road project, and have some one-on-one. So please reach out. We will do office hours, and if you just show up, we'll figure it out. But if we can schedule it, it'll make it more efficient for everyone.
Are you saying office hours in Washington, D.C., or
office hours in Utah?
Oh,
so, wait. So that's a Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and it's we did that kind of many of you go up for Yellow Cake Caucus and UAC and Rural Caucus on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, so we will be there.
Okay.
So reach out to me and let me know, yes, I'd like to be able to set up a meeting, and we'll get that taken care of.
Okay. And Cindy, on that note, our county has reached out to all of our mayors and asked them for ideas for funding so that it's not just because their office contacted the commission and said, hey, you know, what projects do you have that are shovel ready that you could ask for? And it'll be applications in March, right? Probably?
Yeah.
Yeah. And instead of us just top down making those decisions, we've reached out to our mayors and asked them, okay, what are your top three projects that you can present to us? And then we'll make prioritization from there.
Thank you. But if they want, that the individual municipalities can reach out directly and put in their own. So it's not, I mean, we reached out, but we've also reached out to a number of municipalities. School, any government or nonprofit can apply directly. It doesn't have to go through the counties. So.
Oh, okay. Oh. Is there any, like, do you all have a certain amount in mind for each area and... So should we be coordinating with our municipalities in order to?
You can, but you don't have to. We will submit. We assume it's going to be 15 projects. That's what it's been in the past. Each member of Congress can submit 15.
and we will submit as many as we can. Mm-hmm. And we do some culling, I guess, of the best projects, and we present those. But it's not like, you know, if the best three projects are all in Kane County, and one is Orderville, and one's Kane County, and one's a new school in Kane County, we'll do the top three. It doesn't necessarily have to be like one from Kane, and one from Iron, and one from Garfield, and one from Miller. Yeah.
So you sent this out already to all the mayors?
We have sent out a long time ago to the mayors, but if you are in contact with them and can reach out, remind them, or okay, let them know.
Cindy, remind us your phone number. 435. Okay.
477.
Okay.
2531. Yes.
Is there someone here for the universities and technical colleges
Thanks,
update?
Cindy. No.
All right.
Stephen Lisenby did say, though, that he supports us. He's busy right now, but he really supports Five County, and he'll do anything to help us. So.
Mm-hmm. He's been really great.
Right. Speaking for SUU.
I'm on Dixie Tech's board.
Do we need local affairs discussion for 5 minutes?
Yes, Dave.
David's here.
Yes, Dave. David here.
State agency updates.
Oh, sorry.
No, you're good. So when I was in the Air Force 100 years ago, they really preached situational awareness, right? You got to know what's going on around you. So I have some informational awareness information for you guys today. It was good to hear this about the CT high school and some of those things. And we, you know, we talked about unemployment rates, and we talk about that a lot, right? I think I update you guys every time. But I want to put this in perspective. So in 2021, in just in our five county region, in the Southwest region, we had 105,250 open jobs, right?
And it was up.
105,250, and at the same time in that year, we had a total of 10,580 unemployment insurance claims, right? So just kind of putting things in perspective. And then fast forward into 2021, we had, just in our area, 114,666 open positions. And our so that increased by almost 10,000. And our unemployment rate, or our unemployment claimants, went down by 3,000, nearly 3,000, to 7,381. So when you hear about, you know, unemployment, people on unemployment, just know that there's way more jobs out there than we have people to do, and that's why these pathways that we're developing are so important, to help us tap into people that are on the sidelines in the labor market and those that aren't participating in labor market, right? I think it's important to find ways to bring them back in so that we can continue to grow economically, right? But so that's one thing. The second thing is just due to the passage of the omnibus bill, those pandemic programs and the money associated with that are ending. So Sunday, the 5th, was the last day for the rental assistance program, so they're no longer taking applications for that, and that program's going away. The SNAP emergency allotment, or the max benefit program, is going away, so that you're going to see people now, you know, the rental assistance, your rental assistance and food is going back to normal, thank goodness, right?
Go back to work.
So anyway, those are the things that are happening with some of the Medicaid programs. Those are going to be phasing back over time. But I just wanted you to know the dates for those, right? So that if you hear things, you know what's going on. So that's really all I've got to share today.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dave.
Yep. Sorry, I couldn't see you in the back of my head.
No, you're good. I like to hide in the back where nobody can see me.
Dave, what's my unemployment rate right now? What is it?
5.9%
in Garfield County.
Yep.
Hey, been higher. That's the first time it's been below 11.
It's been higher.
Oh, now.
And everybody else is around between 2.3 and 2.7.
I hate those so. Other guys.
we got to figure out what's going on over there.
Thanks, David.
Okay, thank you.
Lastly, local affairs discussion if needed.
Madam Chair, I'd like to go back to the biomass because I've read through the checklist here. Mm-hmm. And one check the box is governing board authorizing entity to apply and administer the Rural Business Development Grant, including the name and title of the person authorized to sign the grant documents. Rather than have a special meeting, can we just suggest that you do a motion to have the chairman be that if Bergen and I can put this application together with Kelly?
Yeah, that's not money. That's just authorizing a spokesperson.
To sign it, yeah.
Yeah, I make the motion for our chair because she volunteered.
I'll second that.
Oh, you people.
I'm in favor.
Aye. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Okay, Bergen, that's the next step.
Okay. All right. Is there any other business that's pressing? Then all right. I'm calling the meeting to be adjourned at 3:29 p.m. Thank you all.
Very nice.
Very nice.
Good to see you.